You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer, so let's bring her out. The star attraction, the one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever time of day it is. Welcome to this week's episode of Kill Me Now. I am so excited. Now, this is my first kind of repeat guest. I've never had anyone on twice.
Wow.
Yes, but she's so amazing. She was on with her husband, who's some people may know, some people may not know.
Some people know. Funny.
I was kidding. Oh, God. She's not even laughing at me.
I begged her to be on this show again, by the way.
Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Jeannie Gaffigan. Woo!
Thank you very much. Thank you, Judy.
Jeannie Gaffigan, who is the greatest. You're an actress. You're a writer. You're a producer. You're a...
Director.
Director.
Mother.
Mother.
Abused wife.
Abused wife. You also have a charity that you chair.
Yes, an organization. Charitable organization.
And you're just amazing. You are Jeannie Gaffigan. Do you know Jim Gaffigan?
I have run into him a few times.
Like in your house or just outside, you know?
In my house. I run into him occasionally.
Oh, okay.
He lives with here.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah.
By the way, we are recording in Jeannie's unfucking believable home.
Like it's like MTV Cribs, but better.
But it's crazy. I mean, but it's great. I love it. And you're in a really good area. I'm not giving the address, but it's a really good area.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, Jeannie, you know, as when I had you on last time with your husband, I kind of don't get mad.
Okay.
But I found you more fascinating. I mean, I'd known him for so long. And we were talking, and I'm like, oh my God, you have such a fucking story.
He introduced us, though, so we have to at least give him that credit.
I love him. I love the guy. You know, Jim, you know, I hope your career, you know, moves in the right direction because you're really funny.
I know.
Anyway.
How fun was it when you did our show a couple times?
Wait, so I think I did it 3 times.
Yeah.
So your kids go to a parochial school.
So, some of them go to a parochial school. Some of them go to a non-parochial school.
Yeah, a fancy, you know.
It's all fancy.
Right. And you asked me to do, all the comedians do benefits for their kids' school. So Jeannie, of course, does everything. So she was putting together this benefit for the school.
Catholic school,
and I'm like, they're going to hate me because I'm like Jewy Jew, and she's like, they're going to love you. And I've done it 3 times.
It's
the best audience.
It
is the best audience. They're the greatest. Are they all Catholic?
I mean, mostly.
Yeah,
there's some non-Catholics, and also that it's not like that school is more like culturally Catholic.
Right.
But they love the Jew stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I had Father James Martin on my podcast.
He is amazing.
I was on his show. Oh, really? I wasn't. But I'm friends with him.
Well, I had a brain tumor, so.
What?
Yeah, that's what the book is about, Judy.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
How did we not know that?
That's what the book is about that you supposedly
Guys,
read.
Did you know that? Wow. Well, you look good for having
a
brain tumor.
Thank you.
So I want to start from the beginning. So you grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
That's right.
And you are the eldest.
Yes.
Of 9 fucking kids.
Thank you for using the word eldest instead of oldest, because it starts to get oppressive when people start calling you the oldest all the time.
Yeah, now, you're the eldest of 9 kids.
Yes.
you know, what I find fascinating is that you're the eldest of nine kids. Most people who are the eldest of a large family do not want to have kids. And yet you have five children.
Yes.
So now, doing some reading on you, first of all, I know your family's very close and they're amazing. But was it your brother, one of your brothers? Wait, I have them. I don't know if it was Paul or Patrick. We're like, she was always, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm doing it. And I'm doing it now. And I'm, just driven, driven, driven. Like from the minute you came out.
Yeah, I came out driven.
Now. What can you tell me a little? Wait, I know your father was a theater and a film critic.
That's right.
For a newspaper.
That's right.
Yeah. And
I should do some research.
I always do research. Do you think that's what got you into the whole? Did your father get you into it? Did your mother have? She couldn't have had an outside job, did she?
No. She Thank didn't. God. She was pregnant and nursing my entire life. You can imagine if I'm the eldest, right?
Right.
And there's nine.
So what's how many year span of the nine kids?
15 years.
So you're 15 and your mother's pregnant.
Yeah, I'm in high school. And like lots of girls in my high school were also pregnant. So I was... it was
kind of
weird.
Did you go to a Catholic high school?
No, I went to public.
But you know what's so funny? Is like I always thought you shouldn't have kids... if your kids that you already have know how to have kids.
That's a kind of a good rule, but there's also like the you know, accident babies.
Right.
Right. Right. So it's like, I remember one time I was at, you know, the OBGYN and I was pregnant and I was fretting because I was like 35 and right. I was pregnant. They were like, they call it a geriatric pregnancy, by the way. Have you ever heard that?
35?
Like, yeah. It's called a geriatric pregnancy.
Okay, and I was a geriatric pregnancy.
Okay, so most people who live in New York are. It's like only the people
and
who...
And Jews. Jews can have babies into their, like, mid-40s.
Oh, my gosh. My oh, that's a good...
Jew bell.
Oh, Jew bell. Okay.
Yeah.
Do I get a Jew bell, too, if I bring up Jews?
Oh, anything that mentions anything Jewish. I need to let people know that we actually contribute to the world because everyone hates us. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't hate Jews. There we go. Okay, so I get the hang of it. So anyway, I was in my doctor's office pregnant. And I also want to tell you that because I know a lot about the whole like Jewish like fertility thing.
Yeah.
Because I had all my babies at home. And so So my midwife is like the biggest like Jewish midwife in like the Hasidic community in Brooklyn, because none of them can go to the hospital because it's not like clean or whatever.
All right, I can't with the Hasidim.
But listen though.
All right, go ahead.
No, well, ring the bell again because you're putting hate on the Jews. So two bells to you.
They're not really Jewish.
Okay,
but whatever.
So, but there are people that have their babies at home, and so they get married really young.
Yeah.
And just keep having babies until they're like 55 or whatever. So, anyway, great midwives because they have a lot of experience with home births.
She's not Jewish, though.
Miriam Schwarzschild?
Bing.
Anyway, so back to me. I was in the OBGYN office and I went into my appointment fretting because someone told me that because I was 35, I was going to have like a baby with like three heads and I was geriatric and whatever. And I expressed this concern to my OBGYN. And he said, the woman who was sitting in the lobby is 55 years old, thought she was through menopause, came in for a routine pap smear, is pregnant, has grandkids, and randomly an egg was like, hello. So it's like,
what?
Yeah, it happens.
That's when you go, I have to kill myself right now.
I mean, maybe you, but I think that's pretty cool.
Right. I just like, because I'm 56, your whole sex. I'm like, if I had a kid, I'm a lesbian, so it's not happening. But if I, you know, got pregnant,
hooked up with some guy
and I got pregnant, randomly, I would be like, I bring my kids in. I go, you know, you're in your 20s, one's in their in his 20s, like, can you take care of this kid? Because I need to relax.
I need to, have you
Yeah, yep. I'm done. I'm done with that. All right. Wow. So she's...
So what I'm saying is this, yes, your little rule about if your kids are old enough to have kids or whatever, it's like...
You can't sometimes help it. It's like, yes, I get it.
There's a surprise.
No, I just always thought, like, when you know, I was in high school or something, and one of the parents, I was like, now you know your parents have... Like, it's just a thing. All right, whatever.
No, it was, but actually, I had a friend who got pregnant, like, within a year of my mom having Elizabeth, my youngest sister. Yeah. And then... Years later, she was friends, like, at school with my friend's kid.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was weird. And then also, by the way, there was another family. This has nothing to do with my brain tumor, which is why I'm here. But
wait, you had a brain tumor?
You know what? I wrote a book about it, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Wow,
yeah.
I had no idea.
So that's why I'm here, to tell you about it.
Really? Okay.
This family across the street had like a big Catholic family.
Right.
And in a bizarre turn of events, there was a divorce, which is very rare in the Catholic community. Right. Usually you just like, the Catholic divorce is the mother dies of cancer.
Right.
So, I literally just made that up. I'm sorry. That was kind of rude.
No, it wasn't.
But so anyway, so she got remarried and got pregnant with grown kids, and her daughter and she got pregnant at the exact same time. So they had, and she lived with her mom because she got divorced too.
Oh my God.
Lived with her mom. So they were a mother and daughter, yeah, pregnant, had the babies. Kids were best friends, but it was like aunt and niece, right, but they were like sisters.
Right.
It was a very bizarre situation.
That is really mental.
But it was also a blessing.
Right, because it's like, oh God, you and your positive attitude. I can't take it. Now, do you know, can you name all of the siblings in your family really fast?
Sure.
Okay.
It's Felicia, Paul, Vincent, Danielle, Patrick, Maria, Michelle, and Elizabeth.
Wow. Who's your favorite?
Oh, you know, I have a favorite aspect of all of them. There's
oh,
a favorite part of all
with
of them.
You and your perfection.
To create a perfect human being, could take a piece of all of them.
Okay. I'm going to vomit because this is so nice. Okay. Were you popular in school? Very important question.
I kind of was like infamous.
Really?
So I was popular, but not in a good way.
Like, did you, what did you do? Like, how did the infamy come about?
Well, I think that when I started high school, I was very, very friendly. And I was probably too friendly, because you have to be kind of like unfriendly in school to be cool.
Right.
And so I got kind of a reputation my freshman year as like a dizzy blonde. They called me like dippy blonde, dizzy blonde, and stuff like that, because I was very friendly.
Right.
And then so I started to really, really get my feelings hurt by being called a dippy blonde. So I started to be mean.
Good.
Yeah. So I started to, and I started to like write songs, poetry, and raps about people I didn't like and disseminate them widely.
But how did you, because we didn't have social media, thank the Lord.
We passed notes. We passed notes around.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, but you had friends.
Yeah, no. Oh yeah, I had friends. But, right. You know, in my senior year, I realized that I had been kind of a bitch, and I wanted to make friends with everyone.
Did you go? Did you ever go back to your high school reunion? And
you know what? Every time there's a high school reunion, I swear to God, I'm either giving birth,
right,
filming something,
right.
So I just don't have that. But I've been in contact with the committee and things like that.
I hated high school. It was horrible. Were you a good student?
I was a really good student in college. In high school, I really found ways to get decent grades without doing any work. So no, I was not a good student.
So did you hate having all those, like, was there a point in your life where you were like, I was
extremely jealous of people who had small families.
Right.
Because I would always say, Dad, if you didn't have all these kids, we would have so much more money. Our car would be nicer. I would have nicer clothes. And I always kind of looked around at other people being like, I'm so jealous of people who have small families because they have so much more stuff, so much more attention. their parents are all fretting all the time about right. whether or not they're going to get into the college. And
right.
it was like survival of the fittest right. in my house. But looking back, I am so happy that I had the big family.
Right.
And I see how it all makes sense now. And actually, I recently found out that, you know, Karen Berggren, you know Karen Berggren.
Oh, my God. Karen, I love her. I got some info from her. We're really good friends.
Is it about me?
Maybe.
Okay. Anyway, so Karen and I are really good friends.
Right.
And she was always came to the hospital
right.
to visit me. And she, because she and I have kids the same age. So
right.
we've had like the play dates where we like drink wine and stuff and yeah. the kids run around for years. We were both, I was pregnant with Jack and she was pregnant with Teddy at the
right.
same time. So, and we saw each other at auditions at gym and we yeah. just connected. And so anyway, Karen is an old friend of mine. But she never really told me that she judged the fact that I had so many kids until she admitted, you know, to me
right.
that during my illness and my recovery, all my siblings came.
She
they
told
all
me that.
Came.
That's what she told me.
And they were amazing.
That's what she said.
And it was like, you know, when you are part of like a big communal situation
right.
and you're like, I gotta run here. Can you watch my kid? And all this stuff. You just trust everyone and they're all family
yes.
and you have, like, that's how it was. It was like a big holiday, except the holiday that was being celebrated was that
was
I was almost dying.
Yeah.
And Karen was like, I finally get why you had five kids. Mm. I understand it now in a way that I never understood it before.
I'm sure you meet all these families and they have one kid. And to me, like, all right, so I'm one of three. And my mother was one of three, but her brother was killed when he was 15. And her and my aunt made a pact that they would each have three kids so that there was, you know, two left in case something happened.
Wow, that's a
yeah.
pretty intense worldview.
Yeah.
But they I think back in the day, people would have like 13 kids because like six of them would die of
right,
like pneumonia.
Right, of course. Hey, everyone. You know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV. Because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer, and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And, you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh, God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome. Now, was your family religious? Is that why they had 9 kids?
Catholic, yeah. My mom, but my dad was a very, like, he's a very Jewish personality.
Right.
Even though he was he was Catholic. I have an amazing story.
Go.
Yeah. No, he didn't have to convert because his mother converted because... No, I know. I was really lambasted in Israel. In Israel, I was like, yeah, I'm part Jewish. And then they were like, are you still Jewish? I'm like, no. And they were like, get out. So it was not good. Let me just finish one story first.
Right,
because
go.
I just want to say that there was a period of time in high school where I was like, I would never even have one kid. I've done my time with the diapers and all that stuff because my mom, I am like type A and my mom is like free range parenting. Like she was like free to be you and me era.
She was?
Yeah. She was not organized, like no lists,
right?
You know, but she was like a creative storyteller.
Right.
So we would go to the park and we'd go in the woods and she'd be like, she'd make up characters for everyone.
I just love her.
Completely creative genius, but not like production oriented.
Right.
My father, production oriented, like three jobs, taught film at UWM, was doing reviews, wrote a column, very intellectual, books everywhere, and very quiet about whether or not he believed in God or not.
Okay.
Went to mass, but was much more of a secular intellectual.
Right.
But
so why
got
did
married.
His mother convert?
Okay, here we go. So back in the in Germany,
yes,
pre World War II.
Yes, I
okay.
Remember.
If we take it back a little, come
yes,
back with
this
me.
This is before the world.
Yes.
Okay.
My grandfather, my non-Jewish grandfather, my father's father, was an anti-Nazi propaganda rebel.
Okay.
And he wrote, watch out, this guy is no good.
Right.
And there was this, in Berlin, there was a big uprising in the underground about how horrible this Hitler thing was. And there was a lot of people being like, what are you talking about? It's fine. We're going to get money or whatever it was. And so he got put on a hit list.
Right.
Also, one of the things that was very dangerous is that he married a Jewish woman.
Right.
And who was a full practicing Jewish family and everything like that. And so when the shit started to hit the fan, Elena Fels, her name was.
Oh, okay.
And so she and he were targets, especially him, because he published novels about in German about how awful Hitler was and pamphlets and all this stuff. So when the shit hit the fan and like people started getting shot and stuff like that, they had like this whole like underground railroad escape network.
Right.
But they had to be separated.
Right.
So at the time my grandmother had two boys, my uncles, and he had to go in hiding one place and she had to go hiding in another place. So where she was hiding was in a Catholic monastery run by Dominican priests.
Oh, okay.
And so she disguised as the housekeeper.
Right.
So like when the soldiers would come in and stuff like that, she was like sweeping the floor and whatever, like a nun's outfit or I don't know how they hit her. But anyway, skip ahead. My grandfather would sneak in occasionally and have like conjugal visits.
Right.
So one day,
the nuns watched because they were.
There
like,
was no nuns. Oh, it was Dominican priests.
Oh right, okay.
So, I mean, and I'm just saying. I mean, I'm not trying to like air my grandparents' dirty laundry, but this is the part of the story. So he would visit his wife. Let's just say he would visit his wife, and one day, she turned up pregnant, and the Dominican priests were like, "We got to get you to France and to America ASAP because it's going to look like we got the housekeeper pregnant because there's no other men around here."
Right.
Because he snuck in the basement tunnels or whatever. And but anyway, so during this period of time, because my grandmother was an opera singer.
What?
Yeah, she was an opera singer.
This is amazing.
Because the whole thing is though, when the Nazis occupied Germany.
Yeah.
All the Jewish people were, it wasn't like they were struggling. And
oh, no. They
were the top of
the
society.
Right, exactly.
Professors, opera singers, musicians.
Oh, yeah, doctors, yes.
Yeah.
Berlin was like the art capital of the world.
They got yanked out of their jobs.
Right.
And thrown on trains. Yeah. It was like unbelievable.
Right.
And so anyway, But so in order to keep her art going, she became part of this like liturgical Catholic music.
Wow.
So she learned all the, you know, she was posing as a Catholic.
Right.
And really, as a musician, because she was very not religious, she fell in love with the music.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, she
way
got,
better than our music. Oh, my God.
I can't compare. I don't know a lot about Jewish music.
Okay.
But, I mean, like, really complicated, right. like, classical church music. Music. So anyway, she escaped through Paris, reunited with my... grandfather in New York, in the 1943 right. or whatever it was.
Thank God they got out
to start the new life, and came in as a Catholic family, even though he was a Lutheran and she was a Jew.
Right,
that was their like cover story.
Right,
and also then my by the way the pregnancy was my father, so that's very exciting. Right, his name is Dominic after the Dominican.
Oh, I love that.
Priest. So she continued, like, her connections were through, like, churches.
Right, right.
So that's how she got her
and
jobs.
Where did they come to?
New York City.
Oh,
New York
they did
City,
come
yeah.
to you. Through Ellis Island?
Through Ellis Island.
Wow, yeah. That's so awesome.
Yeah. But, like, in the 40s.
Right. And then did they move to Wisconsin? Or?
Well, what happened was they moved. They lived in New York.
Right.
There's a long story. I mean, there's a huge story there. With
this is your next book.
This is my next book. I mean, actually, I think my brother Paul is going to write this book. Oh, okay. Actually, he's an author as well, published.
Paul is a New Yorker cartoonist
yes,
as well.
Yes, he is, and published author. He has
your
a three-book.
Really not that smart. Go
no,
ahead.
No, they're kind of basic.
Yeah.
So, anyway... So she raised her kids Catholic. They went to Catholic school and all this stuff and basically betrayed the Jews.
I'm just thinking you're mad that I just put my feet on this thing, but it's okay.
No, I was pointing at the bell, which you were kind of like, Q was late.
Like, I know, because I was like, timing. Oh my God, is she looking at my feet?
No, I was looking at the bell.
Okay, I got you. All right.
But anyway, it's a great story.
You have to write another book or a screenplay.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to you. So
back to me.
You go to Marquette. You come here. Do you come here right after?
I did an internship at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater.
Mm.
And then I quickly moved to New York.
And you started out as a stage actress. You did sketch comedy.
Yes.
And you created Shakespeare in the playground.
On
the playground.
Which was
how old were you when you created Shakespeare on the playground?
24, 25.
Okay. So you created a way of bringing, you know, giving kids knowledge about theater and bringing them together and you know, by teaching them Shakespeare plays on the playground.
Yes.
And you're 24 years old.
Yes.
Okay. That's not normal, Jeannie.
Well, here's the thing. I really always had this kind of vision.
Right.
And I was really scared. Did you see that really weird documentary at Theranos on...
No. Is it good?
Well, it's this crazy vision lady who has this vision and it's like she doesn't make any sense, but like people like it's like, under her spell. And I was like, oh no, am I like that? But then I realized...
You're a cult leader. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, because most people don't follow me. That's the whole thing. They're like, you're crazy. I'm out. But anyway, so I had, the other thing was, I have a need to do it. So it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm so generous, because I have this like need, which is also something I discovered through this brain tumor is that I was always like, oh, I'm making all these sacrifices for everyone. And I've given up my career for Jim and I've given up my life for these kids. And then I realized, oh no, I like it.
Right.
Yeah. I love it.
Right.
It's selfish.
Yeah.
It's my ego.
Yeah.
That's kind of the,
oh God,
you don't even have to get the book now.
So
I just wanted to teach kids about production.
Right. It's just amazing what you've done. Like, it's fucking amazing how smart and talented you are.
Jeez, thanks.
You co-wrote the animated show Pale Force. A lot of people don't know this, but you co-write with, you guys
let me
are
be,
a team.
Let me just be, I just want to be like kind of humble for a second. you know that it's Jim's voice, right? He comes up with
all. Oh, it is so Jim. I've no, yeah.
It's
of
like
course.
I like tag, I like help, I like right. mold, but it's not like I'm like writing 50% of
other
jokes.
No. But I'm just saying, you are such a big part of it, and especially with the Jim Gaffigan show.
Well, that was different because that was a character named Jeannie. It was balanced.
So you're doing Jim Gaffigan show?
Yeah.
And you hire this woman to play you. Was it weird having? Well, like, why did you want to play yourself?
Okay, well, let me tell you when I hear the story. This is like I'm going. This is inside baseball now. This is like deep state stuff.
Okay.
So when Jim and I first wrote this show, a version of this show, it was going to be a single camera, like. Low-budge,
right.
Like a scripted reality show right. with both of us playing each other, our kids right. running around, the small bed. It was like, it was a very great marketing idea. It's like right. We have the comedians come in.
Right.
It's like, oh, Judy's here again.
Right.
And it was just going to be brilliant. So anyway, we were working on that with NBC.
Right.
And that year, I think Roseanne and Sarah Silverman both also had pilots.
Okay.
Which didn't get made, but they bought them instead of ours. So we didn't get on that pilot season.
Right.
So then the next year we went back and CBS was interested, but CBS is more like, and this star is going to play your
right,
wife.
Of course.
So the first one was Mira Sorvino played Jeannie. They were like, you know, comedy award winning or Academy Award winning best actress for comedy. And
okay, first of all,
they wanted someone more famous than Jim to kind of.
I hate this part of the business.
Yeah,
it's like that whatchamacallit, prom, where they're going to now do the TV show of the musical prom that was on Broadway, and they hire only stars when you could take these people who originated the characters and make them stars.
Right.
You know, it's just what
I just the way it's just the way it is.
You know, so my friend Wendy Liebman.
Yes.
She wrote a whole thing, and they wanted someone to play Wendy.
But this did a whole episode about that on the Jim Gaffigan show, right. where Jim had to audition to play himself.
Right.
And I actually played the bitchy casting director right. on that episode.
I love that.
Where I was
that.
Like, it's not really, I don't really feel that you're
right.
understanding this character. Like, right. it was just.
Did you laugh?
During the
Yeah.
During the filming?
Yeah.
Or no, during the writing of it, we laughed.
Oh,
but
okay.
it's like then I was like really mean to him.
Right.
God, and dismissive.
Good.
It was really fun.
Wait, so they wanted Mira Sorvino to
yes.
play you.
They cast her to play me.
Oh, they did cast her.
I mean, I think there was a test, but it was right. like kind of like, this is who's playing.
Was there any chemistry between
I mean, I don't want to... you know, disparage anything, but it's like, I'm thinking there, I mean, she's a lovely
yeah,
person.
Yeah, oh my God,
so,
I love her, but she, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, to me, it's like, it didn't work for a number of reasons.
Right.
And in the very rare development, CBS said, listen, we want you to recast this role and we're going to make it again. So they didn't say no.
That's,
they were like,
okay.
we believe in this project.
And then who did they cast?
So then I got bumped up as an executive producer and saw 200 actresses.
Wow.
Yeah. And because the whole thing is.
Were you nice in the casting process? Because
I was super nice.
You know how mean they are. They can be so mean.
I was mean. I mean, I think I might have been like eventually developed into a mean person.
Right.
Like later when I was casting the show, only because like the door closes and then you discuss the situation.
Right.
You're like, did they, you'd think they would look at the sides before they come in.
Oh,
you know,
right.
there's like that kind of stuff
oh,
that
yeah.
goes on.
It's, I know. Yeah. I
and then it. I also was like, I never want to audition again after I hear what
I know,
people
right?
talk about in the room when yeah. you leave. It's not good.
Like,
anyway,
what was the worst thing you heard in the room?
I mean, what is the worst thing you hear in any room when someone leaves? You know, it's like, what was going on with that? I was going one way and the other, you know, that kind of thing. It's like things that you would
like
never want
ass.
To see.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think there was ever a fat ass, but because,
whatever.
You know, Jim was in the room,
yeah.
so it could never
yeah.
say that.
Hey, everyone. I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed,
when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, they have palm trees, they have evergreens, they have houseplants, and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York, okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. Forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome.
Anyway, I was in a predicament because it's like a lot of the young comic actresses didn't want to play someone with five kids because they felt like then they would not be able to play like the young ingenue anymore.
Oh my God.
And then the
up.
Ones that were dying to play it were right. too old.
Right.
And also there was, if they were too smart and too like savvy, then it just looked like Jim was like a total idiot and right. like mentally ill.
Right.
So there had to be a, cause somebody that had, they, basically I was looking for myself.
Right.
Because it was like, the person has to be crazy enough to have five kids in New York
right,
City.
Of course.
And be flawed. Because right. if they're too perfect, then he just looks like a schlub yeah. and almost abusive because yeah. he just eats all the time and sleeps.
Right.
So, cause on the show, you don't see the working.
Right.
You just see that he's like the lazy guy
yeah.
and that Jeannie does all the work. So I think that why it wasn't weird for someone to play me is because I had gone through this process where at a certain point where I gave up on me playing me and I went through the whole year of like someone else playing me and I was behind the camera and I realized, oh my God, I can write better than I would ever be an actress.
Right.
And I want to be in this seat. And not in front of the camera with everyone telling me what to do about what my life is.
Exactly.
I need to maintain
yes.
some control. So unless I was like executive producer, acting,
yeah.
directing, I mean, it's like, and I, by the way, I actually do have five kids. So when do I see them then? So there was a lot of stuff going on. So when Ashley Williams came in, she had like 10 backpacks and like, she like had a, you know, she was like, had went to a million auditions. She like put everything down. She was like in front of the room, like fanning her armpits. And I'm like, I love her.
Yeah.
She came in the room, right energy.
Right.
Quirky.
Yeah.
Flawed. Cute.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want you to play me.
Did she, did, was this
I picked her.
Did you know the minute she walked in the room?
I knew very, it was head and shoulders above any.
And then she read and you were like, oh my God. Did you
yeah,
tell
she's
her right
so
then?
Cute. I know, no, I you can't do that.
I know, but didn't you want to?
I did, but it really yeah. was. I mean, it really was my decision because I could ding people.
Right.
Like everyone could
ding.
Look. I could, well, that's a Jubel.
I know, I was kidding.
You did the ding bell.
I was just using it as okay. a ding bell.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, it's your rules. So, anyway, I could say everyone could love someone and I could be like, I don't see it. You know, and also the people who I was dinging were amazing.
Right.
Like, there was a point when Laura Benanti auditioned.
Oh, my God.
And she's, like, my hero.
I love her.
And I was like, that would be amazing. And, but it's, like, not me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So, and actually then she was like, I just got a huge role in something else, so too bad, so
yeah,
sad.
Yeah, take care. And then, I can't believe I didn't audition
else?
For this, because we're
oh,
so
Oh, my
alike.
God. You know who auditioned? Yeah. Who was for the CBS one who? That was... Parker Posey.
No way.
I love her.
I love her too. She's
so
amazing.
She's amazing.
And she,
I was like, I would, if Parker Posey played Jeannie Gaffigan, it would be the coolest yes. thing ever. But that's a whole other story. Yeah. So it wasn't weird. Someone playing me.
Did any of your friends audition?
For me?
Yeah.
I mean, friends is such a
I know,
strange
especially
word.
Especially in this business.
Yeah, it's like people I knew. Yeah, of course.
And then were they, did they call you? Like, this is what I can't stand about. Were they like, hey, Jeannie, want to get some coffee?
Yeah.
But you know that they're trying to find out if they want got the part.
Or can they get in the room? That's a lot of, it's, can they get the audition?
I never
I see
that.
On breakdowns that you're casting for your show.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's so many other people.
That are
and
involved.
It's also, yeah,
too,
and you
yeah.
can't. And also, you have to save your, you're going to take a bullet at some
yes.
point. So you have to, like, pick and choose your battles. You can't be like, this person who hasn't called me in 5 years, I'm going to take my battle. I'm going to go to battle for this person who, you know, you have to be, you want to be nice.
Right.
And you want to give, to tell the, like, a lot of times I would call the casting director and I'd say, because you don't see all the tapes. You see the tapes, they choose. So let's say 20 people.
Yeah, you'll go on tape. They'll watch them. Like, literally, they could be like, oh, she looks like my mother-in-law. Bing.
And you don't even
and
see them.
You don't
them.
Even know them. Yeah.
So there have been times where people have been like, I just for your show and I didn't hear anything. And I know that I never saw their tape. Right. So I'll call the casting director and say, you know, can we see this person because they, you know, they know my brother or whatever.
And did they admit, oh, we had them and we didn't send you the tape?
No, we just knew that. Like, it's just given.
Wow.
Like, their job is
right.
so we don't
it's
have to
just,
watch 100 tapes.
I got you.
So they're doing their job, but it's like.
It's still annoying.
Someone could slip through the cracks and then someone could say, hey, my friend Joe Blow auditioned for your show and never heard anything. So then I could call the casting director and say, do you have the tape of Joe Blow's audition?
Yeah.
And they're
I
like,
love
oh,
Joe
yeah.
Blow. He is an incredible actor, Joe Blow.
He definitely is.
Yeah.
Good at blowing.
And Jane Doe is also amazing. Jane Doe.
Yeah, Doe. Yeah. I'm
like,
a Doe.
Now we're going to get to...
I get sick.
The ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. First of all, how did you meet Jim, by the way?
He lived on my block.
I think I know this
yeah,
story.
Yeah, it's in the book, too,
yeah.
by the way.
Okay.
We don't have to go through the whole thing, but he lived on my block.
I think it's on my last podcast.
Yeah,
you.
We
okay.
told the whole story.
So listen to that older podcast. Okay, so you decided not to do the Jim Gaffigan show anymore because you were not seeing your kids.
Yeah, it was like it was emotionally like
it's strange. It's like, and I did a couple episodes. You were like doing everything. I mean. Still pleasant, which I don't understand, but you were on that set. You were writing, you were directing, you were producing. You were like, no, that shirt's wrong. I mean, it was.
I was pretty intense.
Yeah. But you were still nice.
Sometimes.
No. Well, you were to me. So, you know, you decide, and I totally get that. You know, my career, I have to say, definitely took a hit. But I would never give that time up that I had with my kids, ever.
Right.
That was the
it's
greatest.
It's hard to explain
yeah.
to people. The whole thing is that there is definitely a balance because I do know that it's possible to produce like amazing work and be have an amazing family, but on that schedule, It was impossible.
Well, it's impossible. I mean, I only had two kids, but I definitely gave up a lot. I mean, I would get offered stuff. I'm like, no, they have, I'm not going to miss like their seventh grade or eighth grade graduation. Or
I missed, when I was doing the show, I missed all that stuff.
Yeah. It's hard. It's heart wrenching.
And also there's like 100 other people whose jobs depend on you. And you want to employ actors and crew and everyone, and you don't want to disappoint them. And it was hard because they also became my family, my work
family. Of
course,
yeah.
And I loved everyone.
People don't get that. Like that when you're involved in a show or a successful show, that is your family for all of those years. That's why like all these guys and women, they go, oh, we're shooting a movie for a year in, you know, Norway. And then they all fall in, oh, so-and-so fell in love, but because they're in a fantasy land for, okay.
But you saw that when you did our show, you saw that we were a united group of people.
Yeah.
And it helped the guest stars come in because they were like comfortable and we were all kind of like.
Oh, it was great. It was really upsetting and then everyone's like, why do you think they canceled? What do you think? And I said, because Jeannie never sees her kid. I mean, that's really what I thought.
Well, also, I told him, I'm like, listen, for season three, if you want to get, because I can function as a executive producer who comes in a couple times a week, you know.
Right.
Like how most executive producers are. But you need to find someone who you're comfortable, because he's in every scene.
Right.
So who's going to be that third eye on our life, right?
And making it real.
Making it real, and also not just being like, oh, here's a joke about the Pope because I'm Catholic. You know, it's like
there are
really, really, really smart, funny writers in New York, but this is so personal that bringing in another point of view is sometimes could corrupt the original idea.
Yes, of course, and make it inauthentic.
So that year, instead of doing the third season, we decided to do another comedy special.
Okay.
And we did. And we moved the office here.
Okay.
And I decided to spend more time with my kids by putting my office in my home. And
where was the office before?
And 57th Street.
So you had to like schlep over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Like it was like you're going to work.
It was our studios. Right. Like where we shot the show.
Oh, yeah.
We had offices there.
I was there.
Yeah. So
I played the Rachel Maddow thing.
Yeah, that was amazing.
That was so
season
fun.
One.
That was season one, and then I was Judge Judy.
Judy was so good. So to kind of put things in perspective with the not seeing the kids and doing all the writing and all that stuff, the last episode, which was an amazing episode, if you can wait, and by the way, all the Jim Gaffigan Show episodes are available on iTunes.
Thank you very much.
There's one called The Mike Gaffigan Show, which I directed. It was the last episode of the second season, and it takes place in the 70s when Jim is a kid in Indiana. And Jim plays his father, who's like a, you know, classic, like, you know, says goddamn every sentence, always has a scotch in his hand, doesn't lift a finger around the house, yells at the kids.
Yeah.
And my son Jack plays young Jim.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's great.
And it's 52 scenes. It was shot
scenes?
52 scenes, and it's a 22-minute show. And then it ends with, it's a very, like, if you watch that, then you're like, okay, Jeannie Gaffigan is insane. You could see a snapshot on my mind, because also, I didn't know his dad, but I put together the entire production based on, like, a photo album. So there's, like, real items from his childhood, Easter eggs. I'm really crazy, a crazy director. So I do really things that people, no one will ever know. Like stuff that's in the drawers that makes it more real for me, like crazy.
Yes.
So anyway, I sprained my foot on the first day of shooting the show. And I was like, well, the show must go on. I went to the set in Long Island. It was like the beach, the stairs, all this crazy stuff. And I asked my assistant to get me some crutches out of the props truck, and I didn't go to the doctor. So this was the kind, like, I never would go. I'm like, well, I can't, what, I'm supposed to go to the doctor when I'm shooting a TV show? So suffice it to say that was my attitude. I don't take care of myself. I have to just
You're
do
busy.
All this stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So even though that was the case on the show, when I moved home, I didn't really like go into the spa or anything. I was still like running a house.
Well, and, like, I mean, you have really five intense kids. Not yes. like you're like, oh, I'm not working. I'm going to take a little
break.
And
I was like, I'm running this. Like when my kids had to get school uniforms, I'd be like, we're having a fitting in the wardrobe trailer. Like it was still like running a show. I mothered like I produced. So I was still busy. But I was at the pediatrician's appointment with them, and the doctor, Jewish doctor, was talking about the flu shots, that I bring all five kids in the room so they can do all the forms, because there's forms for camp and this and that.
Yeah, I can't take forms. It with the basketball, because you know Ben plays basketball. There are so many fucking forms.
And if
it's
you
like, why can't there just be one database form? And
yeah, this, I have a chapter in the book about the forms.
I can't.
Five kids times the forms. And if one thing is wrong, they send it back and you can't get into school or camp. It's insane.
Or they can't go. They can't attend. It's so fucking annoying.
I know. So I'm in the room, five kids, 100 forms. She's talking about, she's like, oh, she made a comment about how many kids were in the room and all the forms. And it was like crazy. I'm like, this is like my house. And she's like, I think you all came in here in October or something, right? And I said, yeah, we had the flu shot. And then she said, I said, but we all got the flu anyway. Like, we talk like this, right? She and I are funny. And then she said something that I couldn't hear at all. Her mouth moved.
And you couldn't hear
it. And I couldn't hear it. So I turned my head and I said, could you say that again? And she said, well, I said the flu shot really did work this year, but what's wrong with your ear? And I'm like, oh, I know. I noticed on a plane a couple months ago that my left ear just doesn't hear anything anymore. And she goes,
a couple of months ago?
Yeah. And she goes, what do you mean a couple months ago? And I go, well, I'm like, you know, you get reading glasses, you get a hearing aid. She goes, no. She's like, you know, I was saying, I thought it was just getting old.
Right.
She's like, you don't just lose your hearing. So she writes me a referral to an ENT. And I'm like, another appointment.
And you're thinking, I'm not going.
Yeah. But then she's like, I want you to follow up. Like, she's like the Jewish mother. Yeah.
Good for
her. Anyway, I finally eventually follow up. He can't see anything wrong.
Is he puts Jewish?
You know what? I don't know. Not an obvious Jew.
What's his probably first name?
David.
All right, let's give it to him.
Okay.
Okay.
And anyway, so I come back, probably, just probably not like excessively Jewy.
Yes.
So there's, you know, some doctors you're like, oh, you know, they have
stuff. I know. They're like, oh, you come in. And
This one's like, you know, I couldn't tell you or not.
Okay.
He's an under-the-radar Jew. I don't know what you call. Is there a word for that?
They're assimilated.
Assimilated.
Right, yeah. There's a whole... The German Jews, by the way, are the ones that were, you know, like to be a little more WASPy and hide their Judaism. The German ones.
Okay, noted.
Okay.
So, anyway... Nothing he sees. So I come back and I'm just like, yes,
wait,
okay, here.
He looks at you, says nothing.
And he gives me Flonase. He's like, maybe you're
right. And he looked in your ear.
He's like, I don't see anything. So we come back in a month. So now it's March. And he's like, you know, I'm like, I still can't hear. He goes, well, you know, every once in a while, like 1 in 10 million chance, there's a small like cyst or neuroma on your auditory canal, but we can only see it with an MRI. So I'm going to write you a prescription to go to this radiologist and get an MRI. I'm like, another appointment forms, you know?
Yeah.
So I go, I'm like, okay. And then I find out I can just walk in and give the forms.
Yeah,
and
wait.
So it's not like you have to make an appointment. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it after drop off. Cause I don't like to come home and then leave again. I like to go drop off. Yeah. I write a whole thing in the book about how that's just give me an appointment at like 9 a.m. and I'm so happy because I have a full day. So anyway, there's a whole thing where I go to where I get the MRI, and then I think I can't answer if I'm pregnant or not because I'm like, I don't know. I might be pregnant. Like, I'm always...
Look at me.
Yeah.
You see, I have five kids behind me.
I might be pregnant. I don't know. Yeah. So I have to come back, and like, when I'm not pregnant, so I come back. And anyway, I get the MRI, And that's when I discovered that I have a massive brain tumor that's going to kill me in one second.
So you get the MRI. Are you by yourself?
By myself. It was ticking off my to-do list. I was like, I'm getting the MRI, pick up the laundry, get the milk.
MRI.
MRI.
And so you go in.
Yeah.
Do they have the mirror? Because they now have the mirror.
In the machine?
Yeah. You can now have a mirror in the MRI so you can look behind you so you don't think you're in a tunnel.
I've had those before, but yeah. I've had like 5,000 MRIs, yeah. But this is my first MRI.
And they're so pleasant too, the sound.
They're banging. Yeah. And, oh, I did. Actually, that's when I started writing material about this, is when I was in the tube, because right. I'm like, this is the most bizarre. They're banging.
It sounds like something went wrong and they're trying to break you out
with a sledgehammer.
Wait, so you're in there, you get out. Does anyone say anything?
No, but I see it in the guy's eyes.
You did not.
Because he's like, hey, I tell the whole story. It's like the best chapter in the book. Where he's like, oh, because it's like so stupid that I'm getting an MRI. Like everyone else is like sick or old. And so I go in, I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's like, this robe looks good. I'm just like getting it done. Go, he's like, puts the contrast dye IV in my arm. He's like, hey, later you can leave us in and get a margarita. Go in, like an hour later, I come out. He looks like he's looking at a corpse. And I go, what's wrong? He goes, nothing. He goes, your doctor will call you. But he changed his demeanor.
Wow.
So I go, am I paranoid? You know, because I tend to look on the bright side. Like, it's nothing. It's like, I got more a focus on the fact that I went to please Dr. Hopps and I even forgot why I was in the MRI. Like, I'm following up, like my Jewish mother told me.
Yeah.
But I forgot why I was doing it. So anyway, I go home, leave there, and just being paranoid.
You think you're like, there's a whole thing where
they don't want to tell me and they won't want to leave.
So you leave there without knowing anything. Did you call Jim and say the guy was weird? I called Jim
because they said, sit down, your doctor will call you. But I'm not in a doctor's office. I'm in a radiology center. I'm like, doctor will call me. He told me to follow up with him in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And he'd give me the results of the rule out MRI.
Right.
So I sit there for a while. Then finally, I'm like, what am I sitting here for? My doctor's not going to call this place. At a certain point, I tell the lady, look, you are incorrect in saying that my doctor's going to call me here. Can I see where he said that? And I try to see her. Like, you know, you could never see their screen.
Right. I know.
And I'm like craning my neck. I'm acting a little crazy because I'm like, I want to leave.
Of course.
I'll call him. And then so she's like, hold on, go sit down. And I kind of sit down and stare at her. Like, are you going to like fake that you're making a phone call?
Did you see anything on the screen?
Nothing. So then this lady in pink scrubs comes out of the back and she's like, oh, you know, your doctor's in surgery. We called him just to make sure you could go, but he's going to call you later. And I'm like, huh? So I called Jim. I'm like, I'm coming back. I'm leaving. So I leave and I walk in this very room and I'm like, I'm worried about the way they were treating me.
Right.
And Jim didn't even know I was getting an MRI. Like, that's how little it was.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, it's my fault.
So that's not Jewish because, you know, when a Jew gets an MRI, it's like, who's going with you? You're getting an MRI? I'm like, Okay, so.
I just was, like, trying to, like, get it done. Because it wasn't like I was getting an MRI because they found a lump.
Yeah.
They were like, it was just getting an MRI to rule out
that there's something.
So it's like, it was not, like, a big deal.
Got
you. So I was like, I'm worried. And Jim's like, I'm sure, you know, it's nothing. Now he tells me that he was also worried, but we find this thing in our couple. And I've seen you do your little comedy routine with your wife on Instagram.
Yeah.
And it's the same. There's good cop and hysterical cop.
Right.
And sometimes you switch roles.
Yeah.
But if one of you, if you're out to dinner, and one of you was like, what's wrong with that waitress? Is she mentally ill?
Yeah.
The other will be like, maybe she had a bad day.
Yes.
Because if you're both like that, nobody wants to be friends with you. So it switches roles.
Yeah.
A lot.
All
like
the
good
time.
Cop,
yeah.
Hysterical cop. It's a couple's survival instinct.
Yes.
So at the time, I was a little bit like, I'm afraid something's wrong with me because I have never seen someone change their personality that fast. And I'm kind of a, you know, I deal with people a lot.
Of course.
So he's like, it's nothing. So, but then like an hour later, we were making a documentary, by the way, about the fact that we had no material and Jim booked a theater to film a comedy special. And he's like, this is going to be our challenge. Because we just wrapped one.
Right.
He booked a theater and was like, we're going to write an hour before the date of the thing.
O-M-G.
And I go, I'm like, we just filmed the special. Are you crazy? I'm like, I need a break. This is insane.
Yeah.
He's like, no, we're going to do it. And we're going to make a film about how we're going to do it.
Oh, my God.
So, but it was kind of a really great idea.
It
so
is.
I'm like, oh, I hate you, Jim, but okay. So we're making this documentary. I get a phone call. It's a doctor, the ENT, the ear guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, hi. No, are you sitting down?
Yeah.
He's like, I just want to let you know that I'm looking at your report here from your MRI, and it appears that you have a mass in your brain that is not really in my
purview.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you the names of some neurosurgeons. So I'm like, huh? You know, Jim's like just looking at me because my hands are shaking. He can't hear. So
wait, that's the conversation.
Yeah. He was like, I'm out. You know, he's like, he was very nice, but he's
but
like,
that's
not what it was. It wasn't your ear. It wasn't your ear. Like that was the thing. So, I mean, listen, this guy turns out to be a hero in the story later,
okay.
But,
well, I hate him.
It was pretty traumatic. So I could tell that we could be here for 700 hours telling the story, but with every detail, but suffice to say, that's how I found out that I had like something wrong with me.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's
Just Kill Me.
Now. No,
Judy
no.
Gold's Just Kill Me.
Just
Kill Me Now.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.